The witch was meant to feed the familiar blood from a special teat, which would leave a permanent mark known as a witch mark or a witch teat. This ritual crossed lines between sexual activity and sustenance giving in a maternal fashion. Margaret Flower confessed that, quote, she had two familiar spirits sucking on her, the one white, the other black spotted. The white sucked under her breast, and the black spotted within the inward parts of her secrets. When she first entertained them, she promised them her soul. They covenanted to do all things which she commanded of them, end quote. The familiar was almost a required element of English witchcraft, but does not appear in the same likeness in continental trial records. Familiars are an English, like, regional variant on European witchcraft, okay, so just England. Witchcraft is deeply embedded in all European society and a common point of discussion in theological treaties, sermons, and popular print, especially in the 16th and 17th centuries. It was perceived as a very real threat to contemporaries of all classes and confessions. In this period, familiars moved from being described as pet-like animals to more demons feeding on blood. This paper focuses on the importance of that feeding. Not only do I desire to show how it was used as a categorization method by a trial participant, categorizing the familiar as either animal or demon, or sometimes both at once, in a very confused-like manner, but I also hope to highlight the concept that feeding on blood was troubling and threatening, and I wish to investigate why that was. Familiars were categorized as animals, like I said, pet-like, not eaten by their masters, and often named. Many confessions and testimonies attest to the feeding of their familiars. For example, in 1579, quote, one mother devil dwelling in Windsor keepeth a black cat, which she named Jill, and useth to carry it on her lap, and feedeth with blood and milk, end quote. In 1621, Elizabeth Sawyer was asked pointedly by a magistrate overseeing her trial, quote, what were those two ferrets that you were feeding with white bread and milk, and diverse children came and saw you feeding them from your flank, end quote. Sometimes these early descriptors of familiars are dotted with mentions of blood, as I just kind of hinted to, in a sort of food-blood mixture. Francis Cox, a male conjurer, a profession that's usually associated with more of elite forms of magic, in 1561, tells a story where the spirit required blood spread on a piece of bread before it answered to his demands. Early in the pamphlets I use as my source base from the late 16th to 17th centuries, we see more of this dual payment process of familiars. In John Walsh's examination, he was required to give his familiar, quote, some living thing, as a chicken, a cat, or a dog, and further, he saith, he must give him two living things twice a year, end quote. This is the only time that we actually see a living thing, an animal, being given as almost like this sacrifice or tithe, and I think it's a very interesting case. John also mentions that, quote, the first time he had the spirit, his said master, and here he's referring to a Catholic priest who he claims taught him everything that he knows, caused him to deliver one drop of his blood, which blood the spirit did take away upon his father, end quote. This case is peculiar because the familiar does not eat or drink the blood, as we saw in some of the other cases and will continue to see, but requires it as a payment. One has to wonder what its intentions with the drop are. Is it some treasure to be held and be stored? Will it drink it later? Or is this more of a treat for pets who do their tricks the masters order them to do? The case in which we see the change from reward-based blood to sustenance-based suckling is in Windsor in 1579, which I've already mentioned a little bit. When jailed, Elizabeth Steele confessed to her jailer the workings of the local witch population. Perhaps looking to be less punished brutally by her confession, she gives information on several of her associates and herself about the familiars and their eating habits. She tells them that Mother Dutton had a spirit like a toad, which she, quote, feedeth the same fiend with blood which causes to issue from her own flank, end quote. And Mother Devil, quote, had the spirit in which the shape, or spirit in the shape of a black cat, which she daily feedeth with milk mingled with her own blood, end quote. She goes on to say that Mother Margaret, quote, feedeth the kitling or fiend with crumbs of bread and her own blood, and that she herself has a rat, which she feeds, with blood issuing from her right-hand wrist, the marks of which whereof evidently remain, end quote. These show the change from familiars getting fed by food and rewarded with blood to a more sinister system of getting blood for a nutritional, maybe spiritual value. The familiar goes from receiving drops of blood as rewards for its deeds to a more regular consumption of blood as a common ritual. Although most of the cases mentioned previously happened before 1604, it's not until the 1604 Witchcraft Act that feeding a familiar, or in fact interacting with a familiar in general, was made a felony. As the law says, and here I'm quoting, "If any person or persons shall consult, covet with, entertain, employ, feed, or reward any evil or wicked spirit to and for any intent or purpose, being of the said offices duly and lawfully convicted and attained, shall suffer pains of death as a felon or felons, and shall lose the privilege and benefit of clergy and sanctuary," end quote. So this is a really big deal. While previous acts made being a witch a felony, the addition of interacting with the familiar spirits as a felony in the 1604 Act, and here I'm quoting Keith Thomas, meant that evidence of relationship with evil spirits or animal familiars was technically sufficient to secure the judicial condemnation of an accused person, regardless of whether he or she harmed anyone at all. End quote. So if we take a moment to reflect on that laws are often the reflection of concerns around a particular subject and often assist in bringing the subject even more into public consciousness and accelerating its occurrence. It both confirms that there is some officialdom that is taking note on what is happening in these cases, and that when it's made into law, confirms and accelerates this belief in feeding. This change could be an indication on how pervasive feeding was in trial records leading up to 1604 and the trials after the statute increase in the mention of feeding. By making the act explicitly illegal, it solidified the contemporary mind that witches fed familiars, and they fed familiars blood. Popular prints such as pamphlets, broadsides, and ballads, as well as more traditional forms of communication such as demonology books and sermons, helped to establish in the public mind that familiars were fed both real food and blood. This was further solidified with the establishment of the witch mark. This is the mark that's left by the familiar after it feeds from somewhere on the witch's body. And its presence on the body of the accused being considered the ultimate proof that a person is a witch. Although the sources are unclear on precise numbers, about 70% of witches were identified by these marks in England during the witch trials. And this led to the practice of searchers being implemented in courtrooms, in which selected village members would strip the accused, search for any peculiar mark. Usually in reality, these would be like odd moles or scars or freckles. And they would, once finding these marks, they would almost always result in a conviction. The mark, and therefore the feeding of the familiar, become the prime identifier of the witch in England. I should note, though, that on the continent, the witch mark also exists, so you may have heard of it, but it's only in England that it has to do specifically with feeding. So now that we have an established timeline and basic grasp of the features, I want to consider the wider implications of feeding and the social-political context and how this caused conflict between human and animal boundaries. So what do these concerns about feeding tell us about apprehensions about feeding, especially about feeding blood? The familiar as a feeding animal might seem normal, as if they were sort of perceived as living beings that would require sustenance. However, just this act itself could have led to village tensions, and therefore would have led to accusations. As both McFarlane and Thomas have shown through their charity refuse model of English witchcraft, in which witches were often very poor in their communities, and they often begged for alms from their neighbors. If some of these alms were going to feed an animal that was not agricultural or hygienic, here I'm kind of using it as like vermin-killing animals, neighbors might be upset that their resources were being used in a non-necessary manner. Pet keeping among the poor peoples was common, but in a more useful and not decorative way. Cats, for example, were kept to keep down vermin, often not being fed so that they were extra motivated to catch the problem. And dogs were also usually working dogs, meant to help with the vermin problem as well, and herding. It seems that the familiar as an animal, without economic use, would have caused tensions between the witch and her neighbors. Keith Thomas described that in early modern England, even animal pets were morally suspect, especially if admitted to the table and fed better to their servants. This interpretation is for an elite household, the threat remains the same. The familiar as pet was fed food that could have been fed to a human, specifically a child. Perhaps the real threat of the familiar as an animal is that the witch will replace her familiar relationships and obligations with the pet, disregarding the differences between the species and placing the familiar on the same plane as the human. Such actions would go directly against the God-given dominion of man over beasts that occurs in Genesis, a subject I'll expand on a little bit more later, ultimately challenging the notion that humans were unique and highest among God's creations. The witch giving her donated goods to an animal might have been perceived as wasteful, just like her illegitimate children. In fact, many witches were, and poor women in general, were infamous for their sexual promiscuity, would be seen as another mouth to feed and burden on the community. So she is made into a bad or corrupted sort of mother. However, by categorizing her familiar as a pet as opposed to a demon, this was attempted by the specification of food feeding that the witch confesses to. The witch distances her relationship with the creature from the demonic aspects, possibly convincing herself that mercy will be shown to her. However, magistrates would often push harder for answers, leading the witch to eventually confess what they really wanted to hear, that she was giving away her own blood. This would be the symbol of her ultimate sin. Blood feeding on the surface was meant to be a moment in which the witch sells her soul to the devil. This is a common trope in occult events. You may remember Christopher Marlowe's play where Dr. Faustus signs his contract in blood, or in Macbeth when he drips blood into the cauldron of the Weird Sisters in order to learn his fate. While this is surely an important for anxieties around blood feeding, I believe the apprehensions of the familiar are beyond this and speak to contemporaries and perhaps our own problem with the boundaries of the animal and the human in regards to feeding. To the early modern mind, the soul was contained in the blood. The Christian soul, through the washing of it by Christ's sacrificial blood, was meant to represent spiritual life. By giving this blood to familiars, both categorized as animals and demons, witches broke the laws of both natural and spiritual realms. By giving Christian blood, and essentially their soul through blood feeding, witches gave demons access to the same rights held, gave access to demons and to animals, the same rights held through salvation. They also gave familiars human status. In this period, blood was considered able to pass on characteristics, specifically in the instance of breastfeeding. Breast milk was considered in contemporary medicine to be blood from the uterus, purified by the heart. Through the act of breastfeeding by the mother, a child was meant to absorb the qualities of the mother, establishing it as an actual entity with personality and agency, almost giving it its human status. This is why many contemporaries were apprehensive about the use of wet nurses, thinking the child would absorb some of the qualities of the often poorer, morally suspect lying inmates. So if we consider this, that there's an issue here with the witch, feeding the familiar in a very breast-like feeding manner, giving her familiar blood, usually from the mark that's located in the genital region. By this process, the familiar would be given human-like status, breaking natural law. By tasting human, the animal slash demon becomes human in all but form, corrupting the bloodline of Adam and threatening human salvation. By feeding the familiar her own blood, the witch was giving human blood to an essentially animal being, inverting the assumed hierarchy in the earthly realm. In the early modern period in England, the long-established view was that the world had been created for man's sake and that other species were meant to be subordinate to his wishes and needs. Animals were thought to be on Earth for the purpose of humans, and I'm sure that you kind of know the rest of the story from here. This was a really big concern with contemporary views. Jeremiah Burroughs in 1657 commented on God's creation, stating, "He made others for man and man for himself." Besides the obvious gender aspects of this, this kind of shows the anthrocentric kind of view of contemporaries. It's actually astonishing how crazy, how extensive this is. As we can see, this is a common and well-believed tradition. This was justified by the notion of God-given dominion in Genesis of humans over plants and animals of the world, and theologians and intellectuals who felt the need to justify it could readily appeal to classical philosophers and the Bible, of course. In a time troubled with religious turmoil, here we're still at the fallout of the Protestant Reformation, and the perceived constant threat of evil, man's dominion over earth needed to be reasserted in order to justify the superiority of man. And humans, although with varying definitions, held the favor of God over all beings. Therefore, if the dominion of men is destroyed through the inversion of the food chain, it threatens the very core of Christian beliefs. The witch and her association with the familiar is a direct threat to God-given dominion. Through categorizing familiars, and ultimately animals, on what they eat, we flirt with the issues of dominance, salvation, and boundaries between species. The familiar is just one place in which we see humans threatened by what animals eat. And the best example I could kind of come up with for now is the difference between the shark and the hippo, right? The shark, obviously, we all like fear and we like it's a majestic creature, and the hippo is also known for its violence against humans as well. But it is the shark that we demonize, it's the shark that we villainize, and the hippo is still seen as cute and cuddly, and we make games called Hungry Hungry Hippos, right? So By categorizing animals based on their feeding patterns, like we do scavenger birds versus noble birds versus songbirds, so on and so forth, we're just kind of like we're kind of just saying that by like just the way that they need to live is how we're going to deem whether we love them or not, or whether we like think that they're worthy of our time or not. And the familiar is kind of where we see these tensions coming out in the past. I think that this is pretty much embodied in the phrase that actually comes out in this period, which is, you are what you eat. That's it. I went really fast.